time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
Tom Brady is my Lord and Savior.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Hello and welcome aboard. Vanessa and Gallant right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Paul Gallant. Vanessa is out today. The doctors, she will be back tomorrow. So what does that mean? That means that all of a sudden we transform back into what we were circa 2018. The most interactive sports talk show in Houston, nay, the world. 713-780-3776 is how you text and it's how you call in as well. Let's start off talking about the Houston Astros, who yesterday took down the Tampa Bay Rays 5-0. That means that the magic number to clinch home field in the American League with 14 games left is 7, and they did it with a whole lot of offense, whether it was Jose Altuve early on, Jeremy Pena early on, or Jeremy Pena in the fourth inning. It was very nice to see them chase Shane McClanahan from the game.
Pena drives one deep to left center field, all the way back. That ball's gone. Three-run bomb, Jeremy Pena, number 3, puts 3 on the board. It's 4-0 Astros.
Jeremy Pena, very good to see him hitting the way that he did yesterday. Jose Altuve as well. It was the top of the order that saw Shane McClanahan, man, chased from the game in just 4 innings of work. This is a guy who is an American League Cy Young candidate. Nice to see that. Does bring me back to a time where Dusty Baker, manager of the American League, but also manager of your beloved Houston Astros, had this to say about Shane leading up to the All-Star game when he announced Shane as his starting pitcher.
For the American League is Shane McClanahan. And, you know, he's deserving. I've tell you the truth. I've never seen him pitch. And we didn't play him at all this year, but everybody that I've talked to told me that he is nasty.
I'm still mad about the outrage that came out after that moment in time. People are looking for things to get pissed off about the Astros, basically nationwide, and people saw that. An honest statement by Dusty Baker, who I guarantee you does not give a hoot about baseball outside of Houston. I felt like it was refreshingly honest. We've seen Shane McClanahan once before against the Houston Astros. It was back in 2020 in the ALCS. He didn't look very good. He didn't look very good against the Astros again. Makes you feel good that at the very least, while this offense isn't quite what it used to be, that against a guy like Shane McClanahan, they can do that. Are they going to continue to do it the rest of the way? I don't know. It does feel like as far as health-wise, they're about as good as it's going to get. And you just hope that over the next 14 games that nobody else ends up getting hurt. I have a question for you. And again, you can answer this. 713-780-3776. Because we're going to try to figure some things out about the Astros before the end of the regular season and by the end of today's show. Tweet me at Gallant says, Sean Mapes, at Sean A. Mapes behind the glass. What's the weakest link of the Houston Astros? I'm not sure how many of you were familiar with a couple of television shows back in the day. I was a big fan of all reality TV shows. My favorite was The Apprentice. I don't know if this dates Sean Mapes behind the glass, but there once was a time where a president of the United States, future president, was able to regain his fastball by hosting a reality TV show that was essentially the business world version of Survivor. The first season was amazing. They had this great villain by the name of Omarosa who really just sucked, but somehow kept on finding a way to survive while people that you like kept on getting clipped. But if you ever watched that show, the end of any episode, Donald Trump, the person who was doing the worst, would give him one of these.
You're fired.
Wouldn't always slam the table. I like that he slammed the table for effect there. Maybe you're a fan of another reality TV show. I don't know how many of y'all watched this. I personally did not see much of it. But I did always enjoy this weird, older British lady with short hair telling people on this show that they are the weakest link and sending them off on their way.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
So whether you're fired or you are the weakest link, we got to figure out as the Astros get to that point where they're going to have to cut the roster down from 28 to 26. And as they get into the playoffs, where you want to make sure that Dusty Baker is actually making all the correct decisions, who is the weakest link? So who is the weakest link on the Houston Astros right now? Is there a specific group? It sure as hell isn't the pitching. Some of the numbers that we saw from the pitching, I kept on taking screenshots of the graphics that were up on the AT&T Sportsnet Southwest broadcast of last night's game. And every 5 seconds, it felt like you were seeing something historic that the Astros pitching is doing. Whether it's the fact that they have five guys with 10-plus wins, which they've done, I guess, 7 times in franchise history. Or maybe it's the fact that everyone outside of 2 pitchers who have pitched a combined 8 innings that's pitched for the Astros has had a sub-4 ERA. I guess that's the first time that's happened since the 1979 Baltimore Orioles. Lots of cool things going on. Pitching, not the problem. The problem, it's definitely the outfield still, right? And it's a two-pronged problem here. Because first, you got to use left field as a means to fit either Yordan Alvarez or Trey Mancini or Aledmys Diaz in the lineup on a given night, right? And I don't think you're feeling great about any of those guys in the outfield. Alvarez has been pretty surprising to this point, but do you want him out there? Especially if you're not playing at Minute Maid Park. Maybe you're playing in a more expansive ballpark. Say the Astros end up playing the Seattle Mariners. That is a giant ballpark with a massive outfield that people used to get very mad about up in Seattle because felt like guys like Ken Griffey Jr. and others didn't have the best chance to hit home runs there. The other problem with the outfield, you have no alternatives to Chaz McCormick and Mauricio Dubon in center field. Like, you're just stuck with those two. And, okay, they're good fielders. How do you feel about them at the plate? But what is the weakest link for the Houston Astros? 713-780-3776 is how you call in. We'll take a look at some texts in just a moment. Chip is calling in. It's Vanessa and Gallant. Chip, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well, Chip.
All right, awesome, awesome. So we talk about the weakest link. I think, honestly, you hit on it was the outfield. Trying to find someone to put in center field whenever Chaz McCormick or Dubon are struggling or can't work. And one of the things that I thought about is that we talked about the death lineup for the Astros and being able to find a way to get Yordan and Mancini and Diaz on at the same time. And I wanted to get your thoughts on putting Yordan in right field, adding Tucker to that list of center fielders, and then putting Diaz in left field and DH and Mancini.
Chip, I appreciate the ingenuity and appreciate the phone call, too. Here's the problem. You didn't do it earlier in the regular season. You know, if you're going to do some experimentation, I suppose you can, assuming the Astros do get home field advantage in the American League in the very near future. But, I mean, do you really want to put Yordan out there? Do you want to risk Yordan potentially getting hurt, too? You're feeling good about his hands now, seeing as he's mashing the ball all over the place, and he did have the day off yesterday. But do you want to put him out there and potentially risk injury? And it's so weird to think about that. You put a player in the outfield, oh my God, he might get hurt. But I mean, isn't that been the problem with Aledmys Diaz when you've been putting him out there? Isn't that why he missed about a month of action? Because you had him out there, and oh no, he's not looking so hot. I think that was actually on a run to first base. I forget 100% what happened, but Diaz is a guy who has been banged up a lot. And I actually like Diaz's versatility. He's played in, I think, every single position except for center field this year. But how do you figure out the lineup when it comes to your outfield? Who's out there? You, of course, have to have Mauricio Dubon out there for specific Astros pitchers because that's the way Dusty Baker sees it. You have like a personal valet center fielder. How do you operate in that manner? So that's, to me, the biggest weak link for the Astros right now. It's the outfield and also Dusty Baker's ability to figure out how to put all the right guys in the lineup. 713-780-3776, though, if you've got a take on it, you can text in on the text line. You can also tweet me, at Gallant Says, or it's twitch.tv/ESPN975. The Yankees are getting closer and closer to history. Do you care about that history? Plus, the question again, who's the weakest link for the Houston Astros? Don't go anywhere. It's Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
No Vanessa today, just me, making it the most interactive sports talk show in Houston, nay, the world. 713-780-3776 is how you can answer the question that I threw at you. Who is the weakest link for the Astros? You can also text in or chime in on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. E315702 says there isn't a weak link. Move on. In fact, the weak link is the local hometown coverage of this team. Point taken. Not entirely inaccurate. It does feel from time to time, and I'll speak as someone who you guys know is not like the biggest baseball guy out there, but it has been interesting going to a couple of Astros games of late and noticing how few people are actually there. Is it because we take it for granted? Is it because people aren't that into this team? I seem to believe that the last part is definitely not the case. You sound, though, when you say that, like Admiral Conan Mahdi of the Imperial Navy in the Star Wars universe. The Death Star is the most indestructible ultimate power in the universe. I suggest we use it. It has no weakness, blah, 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 blah. Look, the pitching's awesome. The pitching is a Death Star. The offense could be a little bit better, and I do think that there are some questions about whether or not Dusty Baker can handle all of this. There's a lot of tough decisions that are going to have to be made. It's actually quite the luxury to have all of these options that they have, whether it's for pitching or, I guess, like what you can do with Mancini and Yordan Alvarez, but you're not feeling great about putting either of those guys in the field, though. Let's point it out on the Twitch. He's got a pretty damn good arm, Yordan Alvarez. Okay, I'm with you on that one. Continuing with some of the lineup issues, this was brought up by, I think, Todd the Show. Every time I watch Trey Mancini on first base, it looks like he is about to fall over when he stretches out for a ball. One of the bigger disappointments about Trey Mancini has been the lack of versatility. I mean, he is essentially, best case scenario, your designated hitter, right? You're not really feeling great about him at first, especially compared to Yuli, who has been playing better of late. And you definitely don't like him in left field. Like I took me one throw from him from the outfield that he double bounced for me to say, yeah, I'm done. I'm done with Trey Mancini in that specific spot. Another, this is a text from the 409. Dubon and Maton sounds like a bad TNT lawyer drama. I'm with you on that one, though. I don't know that Maton's going to make the postseason roster. We might get into that a little bit later. Another text. The weakest link from the 409 for the Astros is personality. We're entirely too good to not be more boastful. That is from Zach. Don't you kind of like, though, that they're quiet? I mean, they celebrate winning the American League West. They win the day after celebrating winning the American League West. I don't know how hungover that team might have been, but, I mean, that deserves a pat on the back, right? That they were able to win despite not having, I don't know, probably their best feelings about them. Perhaps some tummy aches, headaches, something like that. Maybe needing a little extra ibuprofen or something like that. Generally, my go-to move for a hangover is I get those Pedialyte little packets that they have. You pour it in a cup of water. You got to get the grape kind. You get something super greasy, either corned beef hash. I'm also a big fan of Scrapple the next morning. And you mix those two together, not like in a blender or something like that. I'm just saying, you get your electrolytes and you get your grease, and you should be good to go, assuming you also pop a couple of ibuprofen. Leave it to the pros like myself to get over stuff like that. And look, the Astros, they're pros as well. 713-780-3776. That is how you jump in. What is the weakest link for the Houston Astros? Perhaps it is time, given that we got history, allegedly, from the New York Yankees last night in their own we're the center of the universe kind of way, for a quick episode of Yankees Watch.
Yankees Watch.
Damn Yankees!
2022.
Side for Judge, and here's the 3-1. Drop deep to left field. There it goes! Number 60! Slide over, babe! You've got some company! Aaron James Judge has tied George Herman Babe Ruth with 60 home runs.
Look at us! We're the New York Yankees! We're gonna put the Italian accent on the bench for a little bit. I got a threatening message from the Knights of Columbus, so we're going to chill with the anti-Italian discrimination that we typically do in Yankees Watch. The magic number for New York to clinch the playoffs is 2. Their number to clinch the AL East, 5.5 games up on Toronto, is 10. Forgotten in that home run call and all the excitement there is that the Yankees were down 8-4 to the Pittsburgh Pirates before that moment in the ninth inning. But they would rally with a walk-off grand slam by Giancarlo Stanton to win. Here is what's great. I really am excited about this. Aaron Judge is probably going to get 61 and 62 over the next couple of nights. You want to hope that it happens, that he breaks the record on Friday, because there is only going to be one broadcast of that game. It's going to be on the Apple TV broadcast. And I know many of you out there are not the biggest fans of it. I know Vanessa is not the biggest fan of it. Look, I like Katie Nolan. I'm not going to lie, though. A Friday night Apple TV broadcast with three people in the booth that probably tries a little bit too hard to be wacky. I understand how that is not everyone's cup of tea, especially those who like baseball, let alone the fact that you got to figure out how to pod up the Apple TV app. It's not the best. I'll definitely admit that. But on Friday, they might get to be the only people on the call for history. And if Aaron Judge breaks the home run record with a Red Sox fan in the booth, possibly talking a little trash about it in the moment, that would make my day. That would make everybody's day, and the Yankees would keep on losing in their own way through a season that I think has been extremely disappointing considering how things started.
Historic! Oh, Aaron Judge just tied Babe Ruth. Do you know who the Babe is? Yeah, the Babe's one of the greatest players ever.
I think it's going to be fantastic if he were to break it on Friday, because I would love to have an alternative broadcast on that. 713-780-3776 is how you call, and you can text in too on that very same number. At Gallant says on Twitter, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Really quickly, I wanted to touch on something that's taking place in, well, not exactly the traditional place that we go when we're talking about sports on this very radio show. Yeah, we talk a lot of football. We talk a lot of baseball. We've probably talked a little bit too much WNBA over the course of our time on this show. I wanted to say, though, that you should give some WNBA players some props. I'm not talking about the Las Vegas Aces. I don't care. I don't think many of you care. It's well within your right to care. I'm not diminishing the sport. I just don't care about that. But we've heard a lot of bitching and moaning about Brittany Griner being locked away in a Russian prison, right? And understandably so, because you feel bad for her, but it's her own mistake that got her there. She went to another country. Surprisingly, the United States does not own the entire world. I was very curious, though, to see what would happen this year, because if you don't know this, WNBA players make way more money in Russia than they do in the United States. I don't know why Russian oligarchs are willing to pay women's basketball players millions of dollars, but they do. And you would think, oh, well, let's see if these WNBA players who all stand with BG actually put their money where their mouth is. It seems like they're doing that. I saw this headline and I thought to myself, oh, they're just skipping the offseason. This isn't a big deal. It becomes a big deal when they don't play. Apparently, all, I guess, slightly less than a dozen of the players of the WNBA who play in Russia aren't going to play. This is actually taking a stand. This is actually boycotting. They get paid significantly more in Russia than they do in the United States. I feel like if you're going to make a stand, this is how you do it, instead of complaining about how Russian law and United States law are different. Brittany Griner screwed up. I feel bad for her, but she screwed up. We don't run the world. We can't just force her to come back. But I suppose that if a couple of Russian oligarchs are pissed off that they're paying millions of dollars, or were paying millions of dollars, for the best women's basketball players in the world, this is how you take the stand, instead of complaining and whining. You do something. Short of, you know, invading Russia and going on some sort of Rescue Dawn mission to, you know, save old BG. While we're on politics, not to get political, but Toronto is finally easing up on COVID-19 restrictions. So you can cross the border, finally, September 21st of 2022, if you're unvaccinated. We obviously seen Kyrie Irving with some hot takes on that. I think Jaylen Brown retweeted it. Kyrie went a little bit too far, saying, like, this is one of the greatest crimes in humankind history against freedom. Oh, well, you know, like slavery, like Holocausts, you know, stuff like that. But I'm surprised it's taken Canada this long to ease up on the restrictions. And I wonder if baseball actually put any pressure on them there, because the Blue Jays are going to make the playoffs. The Blue Jays are going to have probably a home game or two at some point. Do you think that maybe, just maybe, baseball got in the ear of the Canadian Prime Minister and said, like, yo, can we, like, figure this out? Because I do think it's interesting that the restrictions, I guess the lack of needing a vaccination, it'll begin, I guess, on, I think it's September 29th. We're having some computer issues, so I can't pull up the notes right in front of me. But about damn time. I mean, I thought it was kind of ridiculous the way that Canada's been talking about the way that the United States runs its country over the last couple of years. And for them to finally do something where they've been talking a lot of trash, like returning to normalcy, like, about damn time, guys. About damn time. 713-780-3776 is how you call and it's how you text in too. The question that we have for today's show: hey, what's the Astros' weakest link? Coming up next, though, we're going to take a look around the National Football League. You thought Tom Brady was talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick when he was referring to that MF-er? Think again. Plus, Dak Prescott might be back sooner on the field than anyone expects, at least per Jerry Jones. How realistic is that? Both of those conversations on the table. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN. 97.5.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Vanessa and Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. Just Paul today, Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We do have Sean Mapes behind the glass, who has been doing a great job considering we are working with some extreme technical difficulties that we'll probably share with you during Wine Wednesday at 11:15. That's when you get to whine about whatever's going on in your day as well. We got some leaked audio from what's going to happen at Texas A&M's Midnight Yell for this game against Arkansas on Saturday. You'll hear that in about 10 minutes or so. But first, let's talk about what's going on around the National Football League. Jerry Jones talks a lot. Jerry Jones often talks out of his ass. But Jerry Jones, in an interview with 105.3 The Fan up in Dallas, believes that Dak Prescott could play as soon as week 4, which is 3 weeks, less than in fact, after he suffered that thumb injury playing against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the season opener. Ian Rappaport is an NFL newsbreaker for the NFL Network. He had this to say about Jerry Jones' optimism.
I think even Jerry Jones said overly optimistic, I believe was the quote from Jerry Jones there as far as Dak Prescott being back in 2 weeks. That did not seem feasible to me. And based on my understanding, guys, the timeline basically goes like this. It'll be 7 to 10 days for Dak Prescott just to heal the wound, then about another 10 days to 2 weeks to reduce the swelling, then another 2 to 3 weeks to make sure that he can grip an NFL football. That's essentially the timeline there. That does not lead me to 2 weeks.
I don't think it's going to be 2 weeks either. I think they're going to have to deal with a lot of Cooper Rush, and that they're going to have to find a way to make things as easy as possible for Tony Pollard, not Ezekiel Elliott, in the near future, because it's pretty clear who's the better running back between those two. Cowboys fans have probably been telling you that. They've been telling me that for a couple of seasons now. I want Jerry Jones to sit back and take a look back in the rearview mirror at the 2021 NFL season and at Russell Wilson, a man who definitely loves to say things that aren't actually true. For example, saying over the course of this offseason, he sat down with Broncos coaching staff, scouts, and went over an hour and a half worth of film for every single wide receiver prospect in the 2022 NFL draft. There's 83 wide receivers, I think, that were selected in the draft. 83. And yeah, Russell Wilson spent an hour and a half watching film on all of them. That sounds very believable, huh? Russell Wilson also said that he spends 20 hours a day last year after he injured his throwing hand on his injured throwing hand. Then he came back early. He wanted it to be this miraculous comeback. And he really did seem to believe that this was going to be a big moment for his brand, which is essentially knock off Tom Brady. We use witch tactics and weird versions of water and other things that clearly aren't really helping you out to make me into the best person I can possibly be. He wants to wear Tom Brady's skin. It's fine. Russ played horribly when he came back after doing all of that rehab. If the Cowboys are thinking, honestly, in their best interest, they should not rush Dak Prescott back. I don't think that the Cowboys are necessarily going to win a bunch of games with Cooper Rush under center, but a banged-up Dak Prescott with a messed-up throwing hand, we saw it last year with Russell Wilson. Just because the guy's good doesn't mean he's going to be good in that spot, and that's the worst place that you could have an injury, especially if you're a guy like Dak who's maybe running a little bit less than he has in the past after that ankle injury that he suffered. So, Jerry, calm down. Up next, as we go around the NFL, Tom Brady went viral over the offseason for talking about that MF-er on LeBron James' television show, The Shop, that one team in the NFL wanted to keep instead of bringing him in. Some thought it was Derek Carr for a while. Ryan Fitzpatrick recently, though, on an episode of Part of My Take, said that he believes that Tom Brady was talking about him. Brady, on the most recent episode of the Let's Go podcast with Jim Gray, responded to these Ryan Fitzpatrick accusations.
Oh, God, not this again. Yeah, go ahead. Let's talk about Ryan. And I love Ryan, but somehow he's got it out for me. And that's why I actually talked to Ryan Griffin, who's one of our quarterbacks. He said, Ryan's always all over you. I don't know why. So I don't know why Ryan is. Maybe Ryan and I need to have a talk. You know, Ryan's a hell of a guy, too, and I've competed against him. I mean, he's a Harvard guy. Now he looks like he's part homeless, and now he's on TV doing what my future job's going to be. So I think Ryan's got a good thing going. I'm not sure why he needs to, you know, think that I'm after him or something like that.
Is he the MF? Was he the guy you want to finally come out and say that it was or wasn't him?
You know, Scratchy, I like to keep him guessing, and unfortunately with this coming out, I'd have to tell him it wasn't him.
I told you that Tom Brady calls Jim Gray Scratchy. I told you this. I told you. Nobody believed me. He calls this man Scratchy. I need to know the backstory. But back to this. This is very much an example of Tom Brady is saying, who are you? You've never crossed my mind. And I do think that his little shot that he took at Ryan Fitzpatrick was lame. I don't know how you felt about it, Sean, but saying, oh, he looks kind of homeless now. Like, did he write that down before the interview?
Also, that's like kind of been what Ryan Fitzpatrick's look's been for like 5 years now, maybe longer. Like, also, he doesn't look homeless. His beard is very well kept.
He looks like he's a hipster IPA salesman.
Yeah, he looks
or brewer.
Like a Brooklyn dude.
Oh, yeah, very Brooklyn. From Williamstown? Williamsburg, that's it. Yeah. I don't know that I 100% believe Tom Brady, but I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick is perhaps a lot more pissed off about Tom Brady than Brady is about Fitzpatrick. And Fitzpatrick actually laid out a bunch of reasons, and one of it had to do with the fact that Brady didn't shake his hand after one of the times that Fitzpatrick has beaten him. And Fitzpatrick has beaten Brady a couple of times. Fitzpatrick doesn't like Brady. I want to know how deep Fitzpatrick's pettiness goes, because Fitzpatrick seems like one of those guys, you know, at face value that's like happy-go-lucky, excited all the time. But after listening to him on, first off, Pardon My Take, but also on the Amazon Prime broadcast, I think that there's a hateful side to him. And I hope that we see it unlocked as he becomes more and more polished of a broadcaster. We saw it with Troy Aikman. Troy Aikman's gotten better at being a hateful SOB. I want to see it from Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick was also like very critical of Tua because he was like, I don't know what he does well. Like, I don't know what his talent is in this league. And it was like, whoa, dude. Especially like a former teammate. Like, normally the best they do is they don't really say anything.
Right.
Like, that's them throwing shade. It's like them being like, oh, yeah, let's see if he figures it out. But him being like, I'm not sure what he's going to be able to do in this league to stick around. It's like crazy.
I like it. I like it to start off. And look, I mean, he's a Harvard grad, so he's probably smarter than everybody. At least that's what Harvard grads will tell you. All right, around the NFL, it continues on Vanessa and Galan, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Maybe we should save this one for tomorrow when Vanessa comes back, but Frank Reich, when asked about Matt Ryan, said, I could not be happier that Matt Ryan is our quarterback. How long do you think that Frank Reich stares wistfully at a photo that he probably has of he and Andrew Luck, thinking back to the memories of Andrew Luck, you know, being one and done in the playoffs and what he traditionally was over the course of his career, and thinking to himself, I could have had this. There's a part of me that does feel bad for it. Frank Reich signs up for this situation. He gets into it after Josh McDaniels steps back and is like, yeah, I don't really want to work here. And says, well, I'm going to have Andrew Luck. Finally, I'm going to have a quarterback that's trustworthy that I can work with. I did it with Nick Foles, but come on. I did it with Carson Wentz, but come on. I can do it with Andrew Luck. And then Andrew Luck is gone after a year. There is a part of me that feels bad for him, but Frank Reich is going to be fired, I think, very soon. Jim Irsay, he flips the script on people extremely quickly. And I'm curious as to what the odds are, and I can check this out at BUSR.com/ESPN for the coach that's most likely to be fired first. With what we've seen from the Colts through 2 weeks, down 20-3 to the Houston Texans, and on top of that, losing in embarrassing fashion to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who have consistently owned them for, honestly, a very long time when games have been played in Jacksonville, I think he's pretty close to the top of the list.
Also, this week, you know who they play?
Who?
The Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, boy.
And this is a situation where I think, because they play them in Indy, I could make the argument that you rather just play him on the road, because could you imagine those home fans? They're going to get booed. Like, they're going to get booed because they're 0-2 coming in. The first touchdown from the Chiefs, and then Matt Ryan goes 3-and-out, throws 3 passes at the feet of someone else. And then they're like, you're playing in a hostile environment at home.
Yeah, Sean, they're going to be on their ass really quickly. And here's the other problem, too. The Chiefs played like ass on Thursday, and they've had a long week to right all of the wrongs. Maybe they won't be able to. Maybe the offense won't be as good as we're expecting it to be this year. Patrick Mahomes was extremely sloppy. But do you think the Colts defense is going to do a better job than the Chargers defense did on Thursday night? I am completely doubting that possibility.
And do you think that maybe Patrick Mahomes is going to perform a little bit better than Davis Mills and Trevor Lawrence against that Colts defense?
Yeah, good point. Good point. Good God. We went 42 minutes into the show without mentioning Davis Mills, and I hear that, and I just shuddered. Like, a shiver went down my spine.
Also, a little note, I called the Colts 0-2. They're actually 0-1-1.
That's true.
They tied.
But that tie was a loss.
It was a loss. It was a loss for both teams.
Yes, both teams lost. And America lost, too, because ties are bad and un-American, especially when they happen the same weekend that the Queen dies. It's like the Queen pulled one over on the United States of America.
It also happened on another anniversary. Week one, Sunday.
Right, yeah. God. Oh, my God. It is Vanessa and Gallant. That's Sean Mapes behind the glass reminding us of all the bad times. I am Paul Gallant.
Never forget.
713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. What's the weakest link for the Houston Astros? That's been on the table. We do have a couple of texts to respond to on that front. And we have exclusive audio from College Station for the Midnight Yell before the Aggies take on the Arkansas Razorbacks. Can't believe we got our hands on this. You'll hear it next.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
No, Vanessa, just me. It's the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Because of that, we welcome you, the people, into the show at 713-780-3776. That's also how you call in, 713-780-ESPN. Tweet me at Gallant Says or twitch.tv/ESPN975. We did have a couple of answers in response to the Astros' weakest link. I'm surprised it took this long to get answers along these lines. Dusty is the weakest link. He's more worried about not hurting feelings instead of putting the best arms and bats in there. There does seem to be a bit of extra loyalty when it comes to Martin Maldonado. However, in Dusty's defense, we have seen it closer to a 50-50 split of late between Martin Maldonado and Christian Vasquez. Will that continue into the postseason? That I cannot answer. All you can hope for is that there's more nights where Martin Maldonado goes 4-for-4 as opposed to it being like 2 weeks where he doesn't do anything at the plate before having another good one. Another text, 713-780-ESPN. Dusty Baker's gut feelings are the Astros' weakest link. But you would think that his gut feelings would be stronger with the experience that he has had over the course of his life. That's just me. You can also tweet at Gallant Says or twitch.tv/ESPN975. We've got Austin calling in. Austin, do you have a suggestion for the suggestion box of the Astros' weakest link?
Hey, Paul. Hey, man. Big fan. Astros' weakest link. I would say it's still the middle of the bullpen, the long that long reliever, middle reliever. That's what I think, and I think it's because it's just not decided yet, right? I mean, I know we got Javier Garcia or Kidi. You know, that's more or less going to be the solution to it. But let's say, for instance, something happened with one of them. I mean, Maton's not. I mean, I don't really trust him.
I don't know if he's going to make the roster. More or less.
Yeah, I know exactly. So that's the thing. It's just I feel like, and it, maybe it's a long term kind of like, you know, problem more or less. It's just, you know, what are we looking in the future when it comes to like bullpen pieces? I think a lot of the guys are coming up in a few years with free agents.
I love that call, Austin, and appreciate it because over the course of it, you're like, you know, the weakest links, you know, maybe a couple of years from now, they're not going to have all of these pitchers. I mean, it's a great luxury to have. They have unbelievable pitching right now. And he solved the problem himself, Austin did, over the course of that phone call. You got Urquidy, you got Javier. Hell, you could probably throw Hunter Brown out there for a couple of innings based off of what we saw him do against the Rays on Monday night. Like, the pitching is not a problem at all. And some of the numbers that they've put together this year are honestly incredible. And speaking of incredible, I can't believe we got our hands on this, okay? Look, the midnight yell for Texas A&M over the last couple of weeks has been making headlines for all of the wrong reasons. But, you know, it's a tradition. It's supposed to be corny, is what every Aggie will tell you. They're not embarrassed of it. They don't think it's funny, I guess, but they're not embarrassed by it at all. I can't believe, though, that they did it again. They leaked out what they're going to do for midnight yell before the game against the Arkansas Razorbacks. We have the audio. Big thanks to Sean Mapes for tracking this down. Here it is. More like Arkansas. See? Yeah, thank you. Get a little whoop out there. Come on, people. We gotta get rowdy for the game against the Razorbacks. You know what? They call women from Arkansas? You know why they call them Razorbacks? Huh? Not because they're pigs. It's because you have to razor their backs.
Whoop!
They're hairy. What do you call Arkansas when they find out they can't throw against Texas A&M? They call them groundhogs.
Whoop!
What's the deal with the city named Fayetteville? More like Forgetville.
Whoop!
Which state has the most pirates? The answer is Arkansas. What's the deal? How do you know that the toothbrush was invented in Arkansas? Well, if it wasn't, it would have been called the teethbrush.
Whoop!
What do Razorbacks do on Halloween? Pumpkin! Get it? See, you're actually laughing there. Some people are laughing. Who would have thought? What's the most popular pickup line in Arkansas? What's the deal? Nice tooth. Why did Forrest Gump choose Bama over Arkansas? He wanted an academic challenge. Why did Arkansas raise the legal drinking age to 32? To keep alcohol out of the high schools. How are a tornado and an Arkansas divorce alike? Whatever one happens, somebody's going to lose a trailer.
Whoop.
It's kind of mean. And look, as we get ready for the game against the Razorbacks, whoop, you know, giga,
whoop.
I got one last question. We know that the Clintons, they went to Arkansas. They're from Arkansas. What did the Razorbacks say about the Clintons? Nothing. It hung itself.
Whoop.
Can't believe that's the midnight yell. That was a very dark joke to end on.
Yeah, a little edgy.
They might have hired some writers this time around.
Yeah, I think the yell leaders got a little edgier.
Yeah.
It's more than like, go back to the Sunshine State. Now they're bringing up Vince Foster.
Man, making comments about the Clintons, like, you know, watch out, yell leaders.
Yeah, yeah.
I get it, though. Like, you know, you think to yourself, hey, we're getting roasted. Like we have to do something that's going to make us seem like we're hard, like we're tough. All I'm going to say about the Aggie yell is I do not understand why everyone feels the need to explain it to me. We're making fun of it. That's it. We're just making fun of it. It's really easy to make fun of. And you could say, oh, it's supposed to be corny. Like, great.
Yeah, we're making fun of it for being corny.
And I wonder how much longer you're going to want it to be released. Because this is going to continue the rest of the year to the point where it might not even happen anymore. Whoop. Giggum. Whoop. Texter says, twitch.tv/ESPN975. You should have worn overalls, Paul. Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably true. I was talking with Josh Innes the other day, and he was saying, maybe you should get like a milkman suit to do an Aggie yell of your own. I was like, that does kind of look like what the yell leaders wear on game day, but for midnight yell, you do need some overalls. I didn't do the leg kick there either. I mean, check that. The person, you know, the Aggie yell leader, he didn't do the leg kick.
That leaked audio, they didn't do the
leg. Yeah, it's the leaked audio, of course. All right. One last thing before we move on back into the Houston Astros and the question of the day, who's the weakest link for the Houston Astros? Lane Kiffin's the head coach of Ole Miss. And Lane Kiffin was asked why in a quarterback competition between Jackson Dart, which is the most fictional quarterback name I've ever read in my life, and Luke Altmaier, why he didn't use Luke Altmaier a little bit more against the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. And Lane Kiffin, he said that he held back because of no one on his team but somebody on the opposite sidelines.
I would have liked the opportunity to throw more with Luke, but, you know, just having empathy for what was going on in that game and the other sideline and, you know, the hot seat or whatever, you know, he's on just really didn't feel like it was right, where if it was, you know, a couple score game or something, Luke would have got to throw more there.
He's talking about Jeff Collins, who is the head coach of Georgia Tech. He's 10-27 in his time there. He's probably going to get fired. He's definitely on a hot seat, even for Georgia Tech, which does not have the highest standards when it comes to competing, because it's actually a pretty good school. If you're going to do the right thing here, the right thing isn't to leave the dying animal to die in the sun as it's slowly eaten to death by vultures or crows or rats or whatever. It's to kill it. Put the guy out of his misery, Lane Kiffin. Acting like it's noble. You're up 42-0 and you throw two passes the rest of the way. No, get this guy fired. He wants to be fired. Do you think he wants to stay on the job? He wants to get fired, enjoy the buyout, and get back to his family, regroup, and maybe come back into coaching. If you're a coach, would you want someone to run the score up on you and just get it over with? It's not like you're going to lose the money here. Lane Kiffin is being a real bastard in this spot.
Definitely the worst thing you can possibly do is afterwards say, you know, I was taking it easy on him.
Yeah.
After you win 42-0.
That's going to hurt his feelings even more,
That's
Sean.
Even more disrespectful to be like, I took mercy on him because I knew he might get fired if I beat him too bad.
You are doing the gritty while he is coughing up blood and also patronizing him as he's like, oh, look at this guy. Can't even breathe. What a loser. Put Jeff Collins out of his misery, you SOB. That's Lane Kiffin for you. I am Paul Gallant. It's Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Vanessa will be back tomorrow. 713-780-3776 is the number to jump aboard. You can also tweet me at Gallant Says, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Who's the Astros' weakest link? And who's going to get the axe when it comes to the many, many good pitchers the Houston Astros have? We'll talk about that next.
ESPN 97.5.